Oh, good, cool.
So you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, what now?
Introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. Hi, I'm Elliot from Cambridge, England. I tend to write words for a site called UK MMA Network. I also write for AnyGamers, care of Evan Minto. Not as much as I should do, but oh well.
Do you have a podcast too or not?
The podcast died, unfortunately, with the loss of my friend to World of Warcraft. It has claimed the lives of many of my friends, sadly, and I've stopped trying to recover them from it.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I've lost friends that way too. It's like a sad addiction that happens to people. Yeah.
It's, you see it sort of sliding. It's like, oh, well, they're having a good time. It's good for them. They're having a nice time meeting people. Oh, they're now leading a guild. That's good for them. Oh, they have no time to go to the pub anymore. Oh, and they're still raiding, and they're killing a pink dragon every week. Let's just... Oh, they've become a weird amalgamation of, like, technology and flesh and not going out ever.
Yeah, there was one guy who we didn't see for months, and I thought he'd moved to Ohio or something, and it turned out, no, he'd just been playing in World of Warcraft.
Is that some kind of like euphemism for like being absorbed by the internet? It's like, oh, he moved to Ohio. Like, where is Ohio? Like, you know,
it's in the middle. It's very boring.
Somewhere.
Well, and then like, they'll resurface after a while from their World of Warcraft addiction and then disappear when like a patch comes out.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like, sort of like, you know, you hear them mention like something like, oh, I've got to go, Rage of the Fire Lord, or like, you know, sort of like Revenge of the Aqua, something like, I don't know, Pink Dragon to kill, and they vanish.
Wait, am
again.
I actually recording?
Whoops.
I may not be. No, I am. It's got like a, sorry.
Okay, cool.
I've only used these a couple times, so it's a bit new for me as well.
I don't know. It looks actually really cool. That's going to break the fourth wall a bit, but yeah, it's kind of cool to see this.
It records like these great, it records wave files that are like super clear, and it's like amazing. But,
wow.
Yeah, I guess the Geek Knights have one or something like that, but whatever.
Okay, cool.
I don't own it. It belongs to the school. If anything happens to it, I have to like pay full responsibility. But I do own this mic and another small mic. That's like it. That mic is the school, so you can tell because the screen thing is attached. Anyway, is this your first time in America?
Not quite. I previously came to Las Vegas last year, which was weird, to be frank. Like, everything is like massive there.
Do you think it's just like it is in the movies and stuff? I've only been to Vegas once, and I was surprised for like, I mean, I've seen a lot of movies like Swingers or Leaving Las Vegas or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
I mean, I used to watch a TV show Las Vegas with friends, and it is kind of like that in how like the casinos exist, but the thing they never seem to tell you is that the casinos are quite literally miles apart, and they're like, to try and walk down the strip is like almost suicide or very very long marathon, like a very slow marathon to get anywhere. But it's very interesting. It was we, you know, been there, saw a Cirque du Soleil show and all that malarkey, saw Penn and Teller. That was amazing. Like, I've always liked those guys from afar, and it's like, oh, they're here, sweet, you know, let's go see them.
Oh, because like, but, yeah, famous
yeah.
people.
But it kind of lived up to expectations in a more subdued way. While I was there, I also went to Anime Vegas,
is
my first like American con experience, and they put themselves down as a small con. There's still about 4,000 people, which is like three times the largest UK con size, at least fan-run con size.
So are, it's like, are the UK cons like what, a few hundred people or?
UK cons, the largest one I've been to, and my favourite one is Kittercon. Sorry for the plug.
That's okay.
But it's 1,500 people, and that's a hotel con, and that takes over the entire like hotel, and is like very well run. And the master of ceremonies himself is an exceedingly charismatic person who can kind of carry the entire thing. But that's the largest fan run con, like successful one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more, like, there's one called Minami, which is 350 people. But that's the same 350 people every year because they open registration on the last day of the con in the physical con space.
Oh, snap.
So?
Oh, snap.
It's ridiculous. Like, someone will say, oh, I'm going to Minami. And it's like, oh, well, no chance of anyone else going because it's already booked up. Like, what's the point? So it seems to be the same panelists cycling through. So.
Oh, yeah. I met some other British anime fans, like the Sweat Drop Studios people came to New York Comic Con one year, and it was a bit difficult coordinating, hanging out with them. I realized at one point during the convention, my phone didn't accept international calls, or no, it could accept them, but I couldn't make international calls.
Yeah, that happens.
So like they would call me, and I couldn't call them back, and it was like really odd, but we did hang out with them. And
were you able to at least prank call them so they could call you back? That's the sort of standard when you're like a 13-year-old with a pay-as-you-go phone in England. It's like, quick, prank someone, they'll phone me back, and I'll have to pay a penny, so I can at least contact people to go out for a drink, you know.
Yeah. I don't know how that would work if I can't dial international numbers, but anyway.
I don't know. If you can dial through, you can quickly like press the button before it goes into answer phone.
Oh.
This is getting into weird like social studies all of a sudden.
Like on a payphone or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's different. I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah, I mean.
Did you get your badge today? Or?
Yeah, we got me and Joey went and got our badges today.
So what do you think of like the tremendous, huge line of like 10,000 cosplayers?
There was only about 20 people when we went there, thankfully. So we went to the line about 8 o'clock. And then we spent about 10 minutes in the line picking up our badges. It was amazingly swift. I mean, even the largest like for-profit con in the UK doesn't have that many like booths. Like it has four, and it's been known, especially up until recently, it's been a horror to get a badge for, even if you pre-book. But you know, things have improved like with barcoding and such. It just seems that Otakon kind of has the whole thing sussed.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It makes like complaints I've heard on podcast past seem a bit bizarre when it's like, wow, that's the most painless I've ever seen it been done. Especially with the sheer, like I say, I'm repeating myself, but the sheer number of people, it was amazing. So
yeah, they've gotten a lot swifter at it lately.
Yeah.
So how was your? You guys took the bus down?
Yeah, we got the mega bus down from New York, which dumped us in the middle of effing nowhere, like in some sort of IKEA show home, like IKEA car park, right? And seriously, in the middle of nowhere, and then we had to get an express bus. Like, thankfully, we found a very, very nice pair of people called Ian and Chris, who then basically said they gave us like the very, very quick sort of like cliff notes guide to how to survive in Baltimore and how to get to Baltimore itself by basically grabbing us by the arm and saying, "Get on this express bus, seriously, dude." And it's like, thank you, you know, us like mere provincials, like being sort of dragged by arm into a bus with a very feckless driver who just sort of laid back and sipped Coke while we put our $2 into the machine to make the bus go forward.
So, whoa, yeah. Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, they've changed it. They used to drop the buses used to drop you off at a really dangerous bus station in the middle of downtown, and then they moved it, and so you had to go to like a transportation center outside of town and then take a cab. But the last time, the weird bus service I took dropped me off at a light rail station, and I had like a tremendous huge suitcase, and I was by myself, and it was like, yeah. I had to go up and down some stone stairs, and it was like a huge pain. And
that
I also had to suddenly figure out the light rail, which I'd never taken. Anyway,
yeah,
but it's always kind of an adventure.
Yeah, I mean, even getting to the actual like bus stop in New York was an adventure. Like, I came from a youth hostel with my honking great big like backpack and bag. Like getting it through the actual New York subway was an adventure, to say the least. I'm kind of glad I didn't go in peak time, or I think someone would have just killed me for being an annoying twat with a bag. Like, yeah.
New Yorkers only angrily, they only look at you angrily if you're blocking a stairway or like blocking the entrance to the subway.
Oh, yeah. I kind of avoid that. I mean, like, thankfully, yeah. Lonely Planet at least said that much in their sort of preview guide.
But being from like a, I don't know, I think European tourists are a bit better at that sort of thing, where they've walked around a major city, whereas a lot of Americans like never walk anywhere ever and have no idea how to like be a pedestrian, and so they cluelessly stand around and block traffic in ridiculous ways.
I mean, it has been kind of a hard habit to unlearn, because London, you have the underground system, which is the same as the metro, but the stations are exceedingly close together, and you can kind of forget that at times. So you think that's like two blocks away, equivalent US. Whereas in New York, I was thinking, oh, that's just one station away, I can walk that. And then I get there, and it's like my feet are on fire, sort of like dealy. And so I had to quickly learn that, like, the map is not like, you know, the tube map does not correspond to distance whatsoever.
Oh no, yeah, it's not quite to scale, but it's different. Like, some stations really are close together, but others are like walking between 34th and 42nd Street is hellish.
Yeah.
It's not even that far, but it's a hellish journey.
Yeah, I've had multiple problems before with my hostel was on 103rd Street, but there are two 103rd Streets. And like the number, the combination of color, number, letter, yada yada. Like the first night of being here, it's like, what do I do? Like, help! You know, sort of like mild panic rising of like, you know, unable to quell. Like, I want to sleep. You know, sort of like moment of like, okay, find a local. Okay, they blew me off. Try again. Sort of like trying to find a way to the hostel.
If you can find a local that speaks English, that's good too.
Yeah, I know. I have had one lady. I sort of said, excuse me, do you know the way to the Met? And she turned around, spoke completely fluent Japanese to me. And I'm like, lovely. Have a nice day. And then just sort of like try someone else. I think she's probably asking me for directions at the same time, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. The trouble is, like, New Yorkers start to have a look that's unapproachable, that deters other people catching their eye.
Yeah.
So then there's a curious part where when people first move to New York, like, they have a look about them that kind of invites conversation, or they look at you for too long. So people start asking you directions after only being there a week. And it's,
yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah, that happened to me on the subway the second day there. This very nicely suited gentleman businessman.
Yeah.
You know, exceedingly nicely man. Excuse me, do you know if this subway goes to 40 whatever street? And I said, I'm very sorry, but you're asking the entirely wrong person. And he looked so crestfallen. And it's like, I'm sorry, dude. I really can't help. You know, what do I do?
Well, there's some British people who live here or do a lot of business here, so it's reasonable that even if he hadn't turned, even if he had turned you talking, there was a. You may have known.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one key thing I learned, and this is kind of like the sort of like, you know, guide to future people who might come to New York, is like, don't pick up the tube map because it's effing huge and really cumbersome. I got my iPhone out and just took a picture of the actual tube Manhattan tube map on a poster, and I just used my phone to view that instead of the like 400 sheets like map
right.
of doom.
And like 399 of those sheets don't apply to you if you're only in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's like local area Brooklyn and New Jersey rail. I'm like, what the hell?
Long Island Railroad's on the back.
Yeah, yeah. It's got like step-by-step instructions on how to get Coney Island and recreate the Warriors, but yeah. It doesn't have instructions on how to get home or get a burrito, you know.
But if you did want to recreate the Warriors, you can.
Then
you'll need that map because it has the entire system.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it tells you exactly when and where to do what, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, do this, you know, it's fine, you know.
Yeah, an iPhone app is probably a lot better for beginners.
Or oh, yeah, yeah.
The tourists have their little maps often, but that's also a clue that you're a tourist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you pull one out on the street, you're more than likely to get someone come up to you and tell you a sob story. Like what happened to my first day when some guy came up to me and said to me about it, said his aunt chucked him out, and maybe he could have been, I don't know, but slightly terrifying when you're first there and you're this, like, I'm not a short person, I'm 6'4", and this guy is like another 4 inches taller than me, and he's towering over me, telling me about his aunt chucked him out. I'm like, how do I refuse this person an escape? Like, he wants $10 and I want to escape and go home, sort of thing. But very nice, but very polite, so, you know.
The polite homeless.
I can appreciate politeness, you know.
That's lucky. Did anyone ask you if you like comedy?
Sorry?
Did anyone ask you if you like comedy, or have you not been to Times Square?
Oh, no, that hasn't happened to me yet.
Okay.
I probably won't now. I'm in safely in Baltimore.
I have a very sweet aunt who came to the city, and like after like a couple hours of being in her whatever Times Square hotel, she was like, some men came up to us and they asked if we like comedy. I'm like, oh, I'm so sick of those guys.
How dare they?
Right. They're selling tickets to their comedy. That's the inevitable tourist experience.
Oh, that's when my parents got to see the Blue Man Group in Vegas when they went here. Just some people came up to them and just sold them tickets for a midget show and the Blue Man Group. That's what they told me about, you know, that's what they said, you know.
So I guess our adventure getting to Otakon, that I'm trying to see if I'm running out of memory or anything. Our adventure was, so we rented a car, it's actually a giant SUV that's larger than any vehicle I've ever driven before.
So kind of like a minivan?
No, like a truck crossed with a van.
A lorry?
Like a regular van and a truck melted together. It seats like 7 people.
Yeah, like a moving rental lorry
sort of
thing.
It's a four-wheel drive thing, and I don't know if I've ever driven.
I'm aware of what you mean, but I'm not sure what the exact word
vehicle.
Is here.
Yeah, yeah. But it's humongous, and I had not driven in Manhattan much, but I drove the 12 blocks to Vertical. And then we loaded the car, and then Laura drove a lot of the rest of the way out of Manhattan, which took 3 hours to move 3 blocks through Soho before we got in like the Holland Tunnel. Then after that, after we stopped in Jersey at her parents' house to pick up stuff, like the rest, then there was like huge rainstorms for the rest of the trip, also like slowing our journey. But we did stop at a Waffle House, which you can only get in the South, which is pretty gross and only significant. Anyway, I took pictures of that on Twitter.
So what is it, like a greasy spoon or something?
Yeah, okay. But like a chain, and yeah. It's also
very
charming.
Is that where you find waffles and chicken?
Yes, you can get waffles and chicken there. And that white gravy that I was telling you about. Oh. I think I took a picture of Dave's food.
What, to satisfy my curiosity for bizarro things friends have told me about?
Yeah. Oh, wait. Here's my camera.
Yeah, note here, I still can't believe that, like, biscuits and gravy is a thing.
Yeah, you should say how you thought that getting... Tell me the story about the waffle on fried chicken the first time you saw it.
Sorry?
Tell me your story about like the waffle on fried chicken.
One of my friends who lives in San Francisco kind of told me about, and said, well, it was actually a Wikipedia link to waffles and chicken. I thought, this is ridiculous. And I looked for it, and it's a picture of a plate with like waffles on one side and fried chicken on the other. And it's the page is like, oh, no, breakfast delicacy, soul food. And I'm thinking, no bloody way, that's ridiculous. This is freaking stupid. This has got to be a Photoshop of some description, like some kind of subterfuge, and like, you know, like, people will be careful on some pages like George Washington. If any edits are made that are malicious, deleted. You know, Wikipedians will get on that shit and they will defend the honour of great Lord, you know, Wikimedia. But no, waffles and chicken, who cares? So obviously that'll be a Photoshop and no one would care for a good 6 months until like some muggins like me found it and thought, what the effing hell?
You're like flagged for removal.
Yeah. It's like, how can you eat that? That's going on there.
But I was telling you about like white gravy that you put on like southern biscuits. This is for proportion, this is the plate in size to Dave. And then I have like a close up. It's got like,
it looks like, it looks like
those are shredded potatoes.
It looks like cheese and chive sauce.
Sort of. It's really thick, and I think there's bacon involved and like cream.
There's
and
always
flour.
Bacon involved.
Probably in southern cooking.
No, seriously, it looks like cheese and chive sauce. That's disturbing. Right.
It's probably thicker than that. Oh. It's kind of disgusting, really.
Yeah, you don't say.
I'm not from the south, so I'm not really into the white gravy. If you want to learn more about white gravy, I recommend listening to the Fast Karate for the Gentleman podcast.
I would listen to them for all of my like ridiculous like pulled pork sandwich chat. You have no idea how much I sort of realized as I was pulling out of as we were leaving on the bus. I thought, damn, I didn't find that Brooklyn like pulled pork sandwich place. You know?
Oh, that's quite far. Like, it's not that far into Brooklyn, but it's a bit of an adventure to get to.
My friend also told me about Junior's in Brooklyn, which is like some sort of cheesecake thing. I've told about.
There's a thing about New York cheesecake that like.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's actually kind of a tangent. Horribly, pardon me, but it's kind of a delicacy in the UK where it's like if it's a cheesecake, it's a cheesecake. But if it's a New York cheesecake, you can charge £2 more for it and call it finest. But no, it's actually really good. But I'm a fan of it myself.
I went to the Black Forest and they were like bragging about how different their cheesecake was than New York cheesecake or whatever. But I think there's like a slight difference between like New York cheesecake and like standard American cheesecake. I think standard American cheesecake is maybe even denser. Like, Junior's cheesecake is supposed to be kind of the standard.
Yeah, I heard it has, like, a different base or something that makes it crunchier.
It's not really crunchy, but it is thick. Like, it's not, like, a fluffy, light thing. It's, like, heavy, and you might die, and it's, like, a zillion calories.
You might die.
And because it's Junior's, they give you, like, a giant slice, and so, you know.
That's another, complete horrible tangent, but, like, there's been calorie counts on everything I've, like, seen so far.
Oh,
like,
there's some local ordinance where there's a bunch of, like, I want to say parenty laws or something. Yeah. What's that called? Where the government is trying to be your parents? I forget.
Those
laws. And so, like, a few years ago, they put calorie counts on the menus, which helps me because I do count a lot of calories because I used to be, like, much larger. Anyway, so I'm always, like, watching that sort of thing. So I was glad when they...
Oh, no, I do the same.
It's only at, like, chain restaurants that have over a certain number of locations. But they're making it into a nationwide thing for certain chain restaurants as well. Yeah. Like, so it's going to be adapted all over the country.
In the UK, you have to make it available, but you don't have to put it exactly on the point of sale stickers.
Yeah.
Like, I was in Starbucks, and it's like, glazed donut. I thought,
360 calories.
420. And I was, like, looking at it going, you know, sort of, bugger me. What the heck? That's ridiculous. Like, it's only a donut. And I thought, eventually, like, well, I'm not getting any younger, so I ate it. It was glorious. That's another thing. I sadly haven't seen any Krispy Kreme so far, like Krispy Kreme stores.
Oh, they shut down. There used to be a lot more locations. It's okay. There used to be like a lot more of them, and then
they're like godlike in England. Like if you go to London on business, you have to go back to the office with Krispy Kreme donuts because you can't get any like anywhere else. Like when I went to a convention in Birmingham and Kitacon, and like there was a Krispy Kreme inside the actual town centre, so we went there from the convention centre and bought 36 donuts and kind of spread the love around the centre sort of thing. It was amazing. It was like a massive outpouring of like Christmas cheer, like, you know, at the end of Christmas Carol, Muppet Christmas Carol, when everyone has their big turkey dinner, except instead of turkey it's glorious like chocolate glazed donuts. Also people in Red 13 costumes and Ichigo twice from Bleach, you know. Yeah, so isn't it Bob Cratchit cosplayers? Where am I going with this?
There's not that many Krispy Kremes. There's like one Krispy Kreme in Tokyo, and there's like a line outside with a maze, like an amusement park, where you have to wait for that long. But then you get the feeling that people waiting in that line will also be the office hero in the way you've described, that they'll return to their office with their giant
thing. That's why all the adverts in London are like, bring a box for your flatmates, sort of deedy, because no one can probably find the things.
There used to be like more of them, and now there aren't. Yeah. I forget. Like there may be. I think there's one Krispy Kreme in Penn Station in the basement. Like that's a proper Krispy Kreme. But like, I read a list of like New York's top donuts at one point, to find out, you know, because if I'm going to spend calories on a donut, it better be one of the top five donuts in the city. And so, like, Donut Plant is really popular, and there are a few other ones. And I guess there's some place where, like, this guy, like, started a business making, like, fresh donuts out of a weird machine.
We have those in the town market back in my hometown. It's like a food van. It's basically the only food van we have in town, because that's another thing. U.S. food vans. Why don't we have them? That's amazing. Like, I was in front of the Met on Monday when it was closed.
Yeah.
I'm tangenting horribly. Please forgive me. I thought, oh, buggery, the Met's closed. What am I going to do? Oh, there's a food van. Sweet. And there's this amazing cupcake. And I was just this very nice lady behind me. She's like, $3, whatever. Amazing cupcake called, like, Cup of Joe or something. It was sheer glucose and, like, coffee. And, oh, my God, like, amazing. Like, of course, I immediately got it on the tip of my nose and walked around for a good while before realizing I had, like, a tip of chocolate
Did
frosting on my
tell
Reddit.
You?
I wasn't with them at the time. Oh, okay. That was when I was still moping around Central Park, you know.
Oh.
And then eventually I realized, like, wait a minute. And it's like, oh, I've been walking around with a chocolate nose. Great.
There's been a cupcake trend in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah. My mum watches a lot of Cupcake Wars or programs like that. Like, there's a lot of programs about, like, making 4 quintillion cupcakes in half an hour or bullshit like that. Sorry. I make cakes at home, and I think that's kind of a load of nonsense to make that many cupcakes that quickly. Like, it's a lot of love goes into cupcakes. At least when I make them. I don't know.
Sorry. It's all right. But, so we're talking about donuts and things.
So anyway.
Unfortunately, the donuts I'm going to bring to my panel are only just, like, standard Dunkin' Donuts, which are not good. I guess they used to be.
I can skip breakfast and just come to your panel then. Problem solved.
Something like that, yeah. That's the plan. Although Ed's staying in the hotel that has the best breakfast in Baltimore.
Okay.
So excited about that. Although we're not at his hotel. But anyway.
Okay.
I should get someone else on mic. Do you have any other, like, impressions of the con, in case I don't...
We all got horribly lost in Baltimore for a good while and turned around at least 3 times. And when you don't have, like, a US, like, mobile phone connection, it's kind of hell to walk around doing the whole, like, Wi-Fi trawl to try and find an unprotected Wi-Fi hotspot to jump on, to then abuse horribly to download Google Maps.
Yeah. There used to be, like... There used to be, like, way more free Wi-Fi, but I think people really wised up to it in the last couple of years.
There was an absolute butt-ton in New York. I guess you'd expect from being such a dense place, but here, no.
Really? In the last couple of years, I really, like, you used to be able to walk anywhere in New York and find a bunch of unprotected Wi-Fi, and it's really, like, not as good lately. Although maybe I'm just because it's where I live, and I expect my neighbors have protected their networks with passwords way more often now.
Yeah. But other than that, I'm really looking forward to it, like, flat out. Like, it sounds strange, but, like, I'm kind of happy that I've got loads of conflicts in my schedule, because normally in UK cons you have maybe one conflict the entire weekend. But at Otakon, I'm kind of having to be really, really judicious in what I go to, which is, it's nice to such a dearth of content, but I wish I could clone myself right now.
Oh, yeah. If you ever go to, like, the ultimate convention for horrible conflicts is, in my mind, like, San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
I've been twice, and it's just sort of, like, because you have to wait in line for, like, 3 or 4 hours to go to any really popular event, it makes you choose between, like, for me, it was, like, horrible, tearing choices between two lifelong fandoms. Like, an entire Mystery Science Theater 3K reunion, cast reunion, or Doctor, like, all of the Doctor Who's ever, or something like that. And it's, like, the same kind of time. And I'm like, don't make me choose.
If you get a Doctor with the multicolored scarf, that'd pretty much be, like, you know, instant. Like, oh, yeah, on the Mystery Science Theater 3000, I've seen a guy walking around with that little bubblegum head robot.
Yeah.
Like, with him.
With Tom Servo.
Sorry?
Tom Servo.
I never watched Mystery Science Theater 3000. Never really came to the UK very much. But yeah.
It's worth checking out. Well, some of the better ones. If you look at a list or something, it's like top 10.
I'll ask for them. But yeah, thanks for having me on.
Should we talk about... Dave, you want to talk about... Introduce our listeners to Nyanpa, a trend that's already over?
I'm not sure there's anything to talk about tonight, but all right. I'll do what I can.
No, we can talk about Nyanpa.
Oh, Nyanpa.
Yeah, Nyanpa.
Okay, my name's Dave. I came up with this cool new concept called Nyanpa.
It's sweeping the nation.
It's like regular Nyanpa, except you say Nya at the end. like.
It's for cat
boys. Hey, girl. We got a great host club down the block. The champagne is $500 a bottle. Nya. Why don't you come to my host club, Nya? Come on. Your bag looks nice. Why don't you come to my host club, Nya? Where are you going? Are you straight, Nya? Come to my host club. Anyway, that's great. I'll see you later at my host club, Nya. And then you go on to the next one. And that's how Nyanpa works. Try it at the anime con rave. Any follow-up questions?
I only know the Nyanpa lines from, like, Lollapeepo, where he's just like, hey, you look just like this one celebrity, and he always has, like, a celebrity.
Definitely, Nya. Yeah. I see the resemblance.
Nobody ever falls for this.
You look like Tom Cruise now. Yeah. Come to my host club. The important thing is not to wear any cat accessories at all. If you do that, you're just overdoing it, yeah. So don't. Maybe if your hair is, like, vaguely shaped like cat ears, that's okay. Otherwise, no.
Do you guys want
fashion lessons on this podcast.
Do you guys want to get in on the convention? Do you want to talk about Otakon? Or talk about the exciting invention. No?
Okay.
Okay, you don't have to. Maybe I should get you over here. All right, I'll stop recording for a minute. That had like an embarrassing, like last year the podcast like had a huge long pause that I forgot to take out because I was tired of editing it, and so I just like posted it. But then I listened to it to check. I was like, oh, God, how embarrassing.
Yeah, I think that was my favorite
line. Wait, hold this closer to you.
Okay. Hello.
How was your journey down?
My journey down was good. We left, we stayed with my buddy's parents, and they were, they're Turkish descent. So we had this really awesome Turkish dinner last night.
Sweet.
And we had a really good Turkish breakfast this morning. And then we had, like, clear sailing all the way down, no problems. Took about 20 minutes to figure out how to park by the Hilton because they had that big street party for Otakon.
Oh, right. They had, like, a lottery. Did you go to that, or?
I went to a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of hit or miss with Johnny Young Bosch, but his band had some pretty cool music.
Oh, that's good.
Like, I'm always real big into, like, you know, younger bands or newer bands, and, like, they actually had some pretty cool songs.
Oh, sweet. So, wait, do you want to introduce yourself and your website and stuff?
Oh, right. My name is Daniel Briscoe, and I am formerly of Advanced Media Network Anime, which is now defunct. We're starting a new page called Eastern Image, which should be up soon. However, our editor was in the hospital last week with surgery on the same foot, two surgeries in like a week and a half. Because he's diabetic, and so he had some work done on his foot, and that's why he's not here. So I've taken over doing spearheading our press stuff. But hopefully real soon we'll have the site up, and we're going to start doing a lot of good content, hopefully. So
sweet. He's not like losing a foot or anything, is he?
Not yet. If it gets worse, it could go that way. But hopefully it won't. I mean, he's in good spirits about it, so I'm assuming it's going to be good.
Yikes.
For sure. So, yeah, definitely yikes. It kind of scared me. And the thing was, is he was like, yeah, the site will be in beta by the time Otakon rolls around, so we'll be able to post stuff. And then kind of out of nowhere, like, he just disappeared off the map for like a month and a half. And then finally I got a hold of him, and he's like, yeah, I'm in the hospital. I just had a major foot surgery. And I was like, you need to fucking tell people about that shit, man, because we worry and we don't know what's going on.
Oh, it's like a Japanese thing. Have you ever noticed in anime and manga, they'll be like, a parent usually will say, you made me worry. And that's why they're angry. They're like,
yeah,
and they'll slap their kid. That's for making me worry.
Yeah, well, like, I was never, like, worried necessarily because, like, I didn't know he had any new problems, right? So
right.
I get a hold of him on Skype, of all things, on, like, Skype chat, and I'm just like, hey, what's going on? He's like, I just had a major foot surgery. And I was like, you should tell us these things. Like, we need to know this stuff. And then, like, a week and a half later, I finally call him at his house, and he's like, yeah, I had another surgery on Monday.
Jesus.
And I was like, dude, are you okay? Like, what's going on here? And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm just recovering. And he was going to try to get, a motorized wheelchair to come down here, but
oh, wow,
he couldn't.
Yeah.
And so he was, I need to stay off my foot and let it heal. And I was like, that's real responsible of you, dude. I'm really happy you're not trying to make it down here to try and go to this con, because walking around all weekend, I feel like would make that foot really bad. He's like, yeah, that'd be bad. So I've kind of taken over spearheading our stuff, and it's kind of been a Charlie Foxtrot affair as far as figuring all that stuff out. But I'm super excited for this weekend. I mean, it's like, this party has some of the coolest people I know at it, and there's some really good guests this weekend. So
did anyone extra cool show up earlier? Because we got here at like 11.
Yeah, you guys got here late. I was downstairs waiting for you. Daryl and Gerald of AWO were here.
Oh, okay.
The guys from across the pond are still here, and they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw them yesterday because they came here.
As far as other people that are in that were here at the party earlier, I can't remember names. But whenever Mike Tool throws a party, kids, I'm going to give you a little bit of advice here. Not only is he a gracious host because he provided beer and soda and snack food and bourbon and rum. He is not only a gracious host, but he's also a cool son of a bitch. I like to call him Mike Steve McFucking Queen Tool, because he is that cool. If you guys ever get a chance to meet this dude, he's awesome. And he throws a hell of a party. So I recommend that highly. It's on my list of things to suggest to people for this. Meet Mike Tool. He's a cool dude.
I just think of him as like a senpai, because he's been in it longer and like he's been writing about anime forever.
He's got some great stories about stuff. And the great thing about him and why I like so many of the people here is you can talk to them about other things besides anime. Like, if you ever want somebody to talk about soccer with, Mike Tool is your guy for soccer. That guy knows more about soccer than anyone I know, and I like soccer, and I follow soccer, and he blows me out of the water as far as following people go.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He's, like, a huge fan of soccer. He was insisting that last year or 2 years ago, he was like, I kept talking about Ed Chavez, this Ed Chavez, that, and Mike was like, who is this Ed Chavez? And I'm like, huge sports guy? Like,
yeah.
And he knows everything about manga. How come you don't know who he is?
Actually, we were talking earlier. Mike was like, you know, if you're a big fan of this national team, what's your club team? What club team do you follow? And we had a long conversation about soccer earlier tonight that was really really entertaining and really enjoyable. Speaking of other cool people.
Did you show about Giant Killing?
No, we did not talk about Giant Killing because I have not seen it, and I am a lesser human being for that. But speaking of soccer and cool people, I recommend Ed Chavez as another cool person you kids on the internet need to meet, because that dude is doing some really awesome stuff, and he is really smart, and he is a vast bastion of information. So if you've never met Ed Chavez and you get a chance to, you need to do that.
Yeah, and you can just go to the Vertical booth at any convention he's at, which is most of them, including like Anime North and stuff like that.
Yeah, and he does.
Or like, if you invite him as a guest, he'll go to your Nova Scotia Con. I'm just saying, especially if there's like a sports game like close to that weekend.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
He will literally go to. He'll do that, and he'll just talk to anyone, and he never sleeps, and so.
Right.
Yeah, you
it's
can
like
catch him
the
early
scene.
In the
it's like, thank you for smoking. It's like, when do you sleep, dude? And he's like, I sleep on Sunday. Like, that's when I sleep. Well, and Ed was talking about how Viz wasn't selling a lot of manga at SDCC last week.
Oh, really?
But Vertical sold out of almost everything they brought. And I was just like, not only yeah, but hell yeah, dude. Like, keep your work up, man. Because I know he works really hard for that company, and it's starting to show. They're selling stuff like gangbusters, and that's amazing for them. So.
It's true. He got them in the black for a few months, is my understanding.
Well, and you know, even if they're in the red now, I you know, if I was a gambling man, and for those of you scoring at home, I am, I would absolutely bet on Ed Chavez to be my dude for this stuff, because he knows what he's doing, and he's a smart dude.
Oh, speaking of gambling, we're thinking of starting up a Kaiji LARP.
I'm down. I don't care what we're doing. Like, I'm down. Like,
have you seen Kaiji?
I've seen all of the first run of Kaiji. I'm a little behind on the current.
Oh, yeah, we were like a couple episodes behind, too.
Yeah, but anything that involves rock, paper, scissors, you can count me in.
I guess these guys did like a Kaiji panel where they have people play the rock, paper, scissors,
rock, paper, scissors card game. Yeah, absolutely.
But then a lot of the people who show up don't know what's happening, and then like the people who are familiar with Kaiji start cheating at the game and win.
Yeah.
And that's what they're supposed to do.
What's hilarious is my friend Killian always likes to do rock, paper, scissors for things, and his whole strategy is to say, hey, yo, I'm going to throw rock. And he always throws rock, and I've never seen the dude lose, because people start to second guess if he's going to actually keep throwing rock, and they'll throw, like, scissors to maybe get him off track, and they always lose. And, yeah, again, another thing you kids at home need to keep track of, and that's Kaiji, because Kaiji is excellent, and they need to bring that out over here, and it will only happen with the support of viewers like you.
The trouble is the manga is ongoing, and as we learned in the car today, apparently, you can license any manga you want from Kodansha. They all cost the same amount, $5,000 per volume. Here's the catch. You have to pay for all of the volumes that have been published to date in Japan so far at once. So if Kaiju's like 30 or 35 volumes long already.
So that's like what?
Times $5,000.
Around $150,000.
Cash up front.
Right. And the problem is Kaiji is a more niche title, so
yeah,
it's not
like
going to sell
real
well. Yeah. But Kaiju's awesome. Your kids should buy it if it ever comes out for reals.
I think that's one for Dark Horse. I think that would
be a good title, good carrier for that.
I'm going to try and go to Anime Weekend Atlanta. I'll try and convince Carl Horn. That's an awesome con, but have you ever been to that one?
No, I've wanted to go to AWA for years. The thing is unlike all these cool kids on the East Coast from New York and the surrounding areas, I'm from Oklahoma.
You never go to the other cons.
Yeah, and Aaron never remembers my name either, so...
No, that's what I remember, because I've seen you on Twitter all year, and so...
Right, yeah.
And it has your real face, and so I can put it like a text name with an actual face.
Yeah, yeah.
That actually helps
a lot. It's not hard to forget. Yeah, I mean, it's like my real name, and Twitter is, by the way, Daniel Briscoe. I post and retweet random things, but it's, again, a bastion of knowledge you should follow. But, I'm from Oklahoma.
Don't feel too bad. Like, they're like 6 guy names that I always forget, and as soon as someone tells me, it's just like saying how are you doing, or whatever. Like,
the
names are like Mike, John, Josh, Dan, Dave. Have we got 5 yet?
That's five.
There's going to be like a 6th one too. But anyway, like, those are like the top 5 guys' names. And if that's your name, I'm not going to...
Right, well, and the reason, I mean, I'll be honest, I kind of cheated this game a little bit because I listen to Fast Karate and AWO and you guys, and so you all talk about each other, and so it's really easy to remember names.
Right.
You just have to get familiar with the faces. So once you get that squared away, you're good to go because you hear those names all year.
And then I also, even like with people who I work with, I'm really bad with names. Like, I don't put their face with their name. Like, it helps if I'm like emailing coworkers and then I meet them at a meeting and then I'm like, oh, you're the person whose name is this in email. If I see their name in print, I'm much better than if I just hear it.
A name and a face usually makes it a lot easier. Where I work, I really try as hard as I can to not remember the names of anyone I work with because I don't like most of them. But that's okay.
It's my understanding Oklahoma's population is so small that you should be on a first-name basis better in the state.
Yeah, we also ride buffalo to school, and we live in teepees as well. You're a well-educated woman, Erin Finnegan. I salute you.
I know there is at least one major city. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah. It's got 10 teepees. It's Oklahoma City, a real nice place.
No. I've driven through the American West a couple times at this point, so I'm aware that places like Omaha actually have, like, tall buildings and things like that.
Right, right. Well, and
much to my surprise.
Because Oklahoma City, it's either Oklahoma City or Norman, which is where OU is, Oklahoma University, has one of the largest land masses in the U.S., but it's by volume because there's so much surrounding area that's not really used. So Norman is one of the biggest cities in the U.S., even though the city itself is quite small. And Oklahoma, for another little trivia tidbit, Oklahoma has the most shoreline of any state.
I've heard that about, like, Florida and Michigan and, like, Texas.
Well, the thing about Oklahoma is they're all man-made. They're all man-made lakes. But we have a massive amount of quote-unquote shoreline, but it's not unlike the ocean because, for those of you who failed geography, Oklahoma's in the middle of the U.S., not anywhere near any ocean. But we have a lot of man-made water areas, and that's, you know, quote-unquote something that Oklahoma can... Yeah, I guess, right? I don't think it does. I think it's dumb, but, you know, I'm not the one who's keeping score at home. Third trivia tidbit for Oklahoma for you. I'm a history major, kids. Get used to it.
Yeah.
The state seal used to be in a little tiny town called Guthrie. The reason our state capital is now Oklahoma is because one night, way back when, some guys came out in a stagecoach. They put the seal in the stagecoach and moved it to Oklahoma. So literally, the state capital was stolen from Guthrie and moved to Oklahoma City, and that is now where it continues to remain.
That's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Well, they call OU the Sooners because they cheated in the land run. They went out the night before and claimed places before they opened up the territory. And so cheating in Oklahoma seems to be a pretty big deal.
Nice.
Which is why we also hate the Sooners, because they're bad people.
After like a 100-year, 200-year grudge.
Something like that, yeah.
I was going to bust out with my Michigan-Ohio trivia that the it's infuriating to move to the East Coast because, like, everywhere between New York and Los Angeles is just flyover states, and they're indistinguishable, and people will say things like, you know, Minnesota or wherever you're from, and I'm like, screw you, they're like our sports rivals. Like, Michigan's totally a different state, and it's like, there's another state in between, like,
yeah,
or like,
yeah.
They'll say, like, or sometimes people will accuse me of being from, like, Ohio, and I'm like, we hate Ohio,
right.
I hate Ohio.
Michigan went to war with Ohio
yeah. over Toledo
yeah,
at one
I went,
point.
I went to Oklahoma State, mostly because they paid me more, but when I said I went to OSU, and somebody was like, oh, Ohio State, I was like, you say that against her, and I'm going to punch you in the face.
That's your fighting
No
words.
One likes Ohio State. Seriously. If you
Seriously.
Like Ohio State, you're a bad person.
No, but the biggest rivalry games are, like, the University of Michigan versus, like, Ohio State
right,
or something.
Right, and OU Texas is another really, really big one. Like, and I don't like either of those places. Whenever that game happens, I root for the Asteroids or a sinkhole. Like, one of the two to happen.
I don't even like sports, and I'm like, take that, Ohio.
Yeah, it's crazy
Is that yours?
That's my
favorite. Okay, good.
It's crazy how living in a place with that rivalry will make you care about that rivalry. Rather or not, you actually care about sports.
Oh, yeah, we went up to CETACON, and, like, it's near... What is RIT, the Rochester Polytechnic Institute
yeah,
or something?
RPI.
Like, RPI.
Yeah.
RPI. You get
RPI.
It.
RIT is, or no, RIT is, Rochester
Institute of Technology.
RPI is Rensselaer
Polytechnic
Institute.
Right.
There you go.
So, they did a hockey game against, it was a huge hockey game against Cornell.
Cornell, yeah.
Right. And I know someone went at Cornell, but I know that Cornell's
right,
reputation
right.
is, so I was like, Ed had tickets to the hockey game, so we went to it. But after even a few minutes, I'm like, yeah, go RPI. Screw those Cornell bastards.
Yeah, no, you really get swept up in it. And that's something that I think can be entertaining about sports, is you can have no clue what's going on. You're just sitting on one side, and people are jumping up and yelling, and you're just like, I should do this too. And, I mean, it's the thing, right, where watching sports on TV can be quite boring, but going to the game itself can actually be quite an enjoyable
experience.
Oh,
yeah, experience. It's totally different experience. I like, baseball on TV, I'm bored to tears. But,
right,
like,
right.
In person, like, I went to, like, one... I've only been to one or two live baseball games, but,
right.
like, in Yankee Stadium, the angle is such that it seems
oh,
like you might
problem.
Die.
Oh, that's Yankee Stadium. That's
looks,
not good. You're,
no,
like, supporting the Axis
no,
powers
I wasn't.
Here.
I
What's
was,
going on?
I went because at work they paid for everyone to go.
Oh, well, that's
I've
cool.
also seen, like, a Mets game or two. I like,
okay.
them,
I like the Mets
I'm more of, like, a
They're
Mets...
not bad people like
I'm
the
more
Yankees.
Of a Mets person. Well, obviously, the Yankees are the evil team. At one point,
right,
Ed thought
right.
I was a Yankees fan, and I'm like... That's an insult. Like, that's
yeah.
horrible.
You don't want to be a Yankees fan.
Like, how dare you think that of me?
Yeah,
I can't
yeah.
believe you think I'm part of the I'm supporting the evil empire here. Anyway,
yeah,
So, but the angle of the stadium is such that, like, it seems like you might die. And after, like,
right.
half of a thing of beer, it seems like that's more realistic. And one of my
right.
coworkers was like, one time I did fall on a stadium seat, and I got, like, a compound leg fracture, and the bone was sticking
oh
out,
God,
and they carted him away.
Horrible.
So that kind of added to the moment-to-moment terror of being at the game. And then people are, like, throwing food past your head,
yeah,
which adds
yeah.
to another, like, kind of, like, life-or-death situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I could barely tell what was happening in the game, but once in a while the crowd, like, explodes, and
right,
it's a good
right.
time.
As far as Otakon goes, I can say that the one thing I am the most excited about is Makoto Shinkai is here.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I saw Voices of a Distant Star for the first time, that was one of the coolest, most innovative things I've ever seen. And then I, like, listened and read some stuff on it, and they're like, yeah, this dude made this whole thing in, like, 2 years on his laptop. And I was like, that is crazy.
I don't know. I watched the... that's always something that they mentioned, but when I watched, like, the behind-the-scenes interview with him,
right.
it really seemed like... At first, he did most of the pre-production by himself, but at the end, a crew came in and helped out from where his old company.
Right, but I mean, you know, a lot, like, from my understanding, some of that was, like, people he asked to help and things
yeah.
like that. And
well,
that,
he, like,
you know.
He animated at, he didn't come from nowhere. He was an animator at a bigger company, and then he was like, I really want to do my own work.
Right.
And so he independently produced something with his wife, and then at the end, like, when he finally got some money, some people finished it, which is more realistic. I think it's, like, it's inspiring to hear, like, oh, someone did this by themselves, but it's, like,
well, the
not
fact
really
that the
whole
project
truth.
Came from his ideas.
Right.
He started it on his own, and, you know, he
Which
probably showed some people some stuff, and they were like, yo, this is really good. You need to do more of this. And so, you know, even if that is the case, right, you know, that other people helped him, quote-unquote,
yeah.
the fact is that the bulk of the work was done by himself on his own.
I think now knowing more about Japan and productions and stuff, I really think, like, it's remarkable that an individual was able to do that. Like,
yeah,
I think a
absolutely.
Lot of the things are produced by companies.
Right, because
and
they still got to feed themselves, too. So
right. But
there's
such a... there's such a society of people who like do things in groups, and there's never one person doing a job. There's always like two people. They work in teams all the time.
Absolutely.
Everyone has to be in agreement in groups and group conversation even.
Yeah.
Like, so there's not a lot of like, I don't think they have the same number of like auteur filmmakers or anything. Well, it sounds like Dave is saying something
talking
important.
Talking about Ashitono Joe.
T-shirts. Oh, Noah has that shirt.
Is this a Colony Drop guy? I think he is. Rare bit of insight here into the madness, folks.
Is this a story?
This is Colony Drop right here, kids. Live and uncut. Here we go.
Well, let me tell you a story then. Colony Drop, live and uncut. Yeah, it's the same story. I'm just going to start over from the beginning.
Tell your tale, sir.
So I was wearing a Uniqlo Ashitono Joe t-shirt, right? And I was at Kinokuniya, so I'm looking real WAP. And I'm there with Carl, the OQA Maniacs guy. And we sit down at the cafe at the top floor of the place, and real Japanese people sit down, right?
It's a rare sight in
and
America, folks.
And for the next 15 to 20 minutes, as Carl and I are talking, killing time, waiting for somebody, this couple is just, like, looking at my t-shirt and making incredulous faces at each other. Like, looking at my face, which is brown, looking at Joe, looking at each other, looking at Joe, looking at me, looking at each other, putting their, like, kind of, you know, putting their shoulders up a little bit, stifling laughter, and 20 minutes. That's pretty much the story. They eventually, you know, went home. And
that's
then
how
we
the
went,
great gang war of 1812 started, folks.
And right then there. We went for Any Song Karaoke, the end.
That's a good story.
No, it's just something like, it's so unlikely that it would happen, I think.
Right. Well, I mean, it's Colony Drop. What do you know? These, like, people are potentially...
What was it? Our friend Melissa Tanaka or whatever, who's like, now she's translating Yaoi for money? Anyway, she did a JET program or something in 2 years in Japan, and she's a Japanese major, speaks fluent Japanese, but like the whitest girl ever. She married a Japanese guy. But she was working in a museum in somewhere in the middle of America for summer break. Or maybe, I forget where, upstate. Anyway, a Japanese couple came in randomly and were like confused about like directions they wanted to ask her something. And so she busted out with fluent Japanese, like, oh, how can I help you and whatever, with her like perfect accent. And they were so dumbfounded that they just stared at her with their mouths open for like 15 minutes. Like they'd arrived at like some other planet, not expecting the aliens to ever have met anyone. And was just like, what? Or another time, Noah stepped on a Japanese lady's foot on the subway, and she was like a grandmother who was with like her daughter or something. Noah apologized in Japanese to her, and he was like, oh, tsumimasen. And so the Japanese woman like freaked out and like said a bunch of stuff to her daughter, and then her daughter translated and was like, oh, my mother says she's surprised because she'd always heard New Yorkers were rude. And it turns out they actually apologized. They're so polite. They apologize to you in the language of the country that you're from.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I was in Italy, and I had taken Latin for several years, so I could pick up Italian pretty quickly because it's pretty similar stuff. And I was going through this, like, it was like this American couple had moved out to Italy to basically retire. This was back when the economy didn't suck. And I requested my ice cream, my gelato, as they call it, and paid and said thank you in Italian. And Lenny took one look at me. I'm a fat white kid. And was like, you're not Italian, are you? And I said in English, no, ma'am, I'm not. I'm American. She said, that may be the best Italian I've ever heard from somebody who wasn't Italian. And I was like, well, thank you, I think. Like, I don't know what to say here, because it's such an awkward compliment to take that, you know, it's, you feel good about it, but what do you say about it, you know?
I don't know. I guess you have to be gracious or whatever. I don't know.
Oh, no, yeah, it should be nice. I mean, it was a good time, but...
I'm tired. I stay up late.
You guys had a long day. Have you told your listeners about your awesome trek of sitting in ass-to-mouth traffic for 6.5 hours, kissing the tailpipe of the people in front of you?
Well, it was in Soho, so the buildings are really nice and pretty to look at, and so that's not so bad. And also, it was funny because there were a couple like street hot dog vendors that like actually came up to people and sold hot dogs, like not to us,
but
to other
people. Oh, that's fantastic. Good for them.
We considered at one point. We were like, we could just go over there and get a hot dog, and the novelty of it would be very amusing, but ultimately we decided nobody actually wanted to eat a hot dog.
Right.
There were other people. There were also like things like an empanada store and like a gourmet grocery store. We could have reasonably sent someone out, gotten groceries, and they could have gotten back in the car.
Right, because you guys were, from what I heard, you guys weren't moving hardly at all.
Right. a couple of inches every few minutes. But to add insult to injury, like, the GPS didn't tell us, like, heavy traffic until after we got into the tunnel, and then it was fine. Like, well, thanks.
thanks, GPS. You're helpful.
Useful. Super useful.
Yeah,
way to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is this?
I think they had Stephanie Shea as the guest, and they had, like, four attendees. And that was Baltimore Con.
Speaking of Stephanie
Shea. Wait, that sounds like a good wait. Wait, tell that again. That didn't seem too
nice. Well, I wasn't there, but... In my understanding, Baltiport is a convention that just kind of happened by itself at BWI, at Baltimore Airport, last year when Lance Heskell from Funimation and Kenny Adomi and Bob Napton from Bondi were all stranded on their flight, including, I think, one of the voice actors, and there were about five or six anime fans who were there, too. So they held their own little like two hour anime convention.
That's
and
fantastic.
The best thing is they're doing it again. They're holding Baltiport 2.0. Lance has printed up badges.
That's fantastic.
They're actually going to have it. I think Gia Mannery from Anime News Network was the lone press representative.
That's fantastic.
So. She also wrote coverage and like, what did they show anime or?
No, they didn't show anime. It was I think the whole convention took place over the course of 90 minutes in one airport lounge.
That's enough time to like screen and some. An OVA on a laptop. Or
I guess you could, yeah, if you had a little projector like mine. But
yeah, that's fantastic.
That is
right?
Awesome. One of the opening ceremonies.
Was incredibly awesome. I'm very happy that Baltiport exists.
Yeah, definitely. I wish. Yeah, oh, Ending Guys 2, even better. Let's just up the ante there, dude.
Oh, there was another joke in the car on the way here. Wait, here, Dave. You should tell us. Oh, we were talking in the car on the way here about MD Geist, and we were trying to convince Laura to watch it because what MD stands for is Most Darling Geist.
Oh, Most Darling is Geist.
It's almost
basically,
like
basically, we lied to my friend Laura and tried to call MD Geist a sensitive romantic piece.
A lot like 5 centimeters per second.
Listen, it's true that MD Geist kicks a woman out of bed, but he doesn't do it for fun.
Right, he just doesn't want her to get hurt. That's my understanding.
He has to destroy Brain Palace, and Brain Palace
Most Darling Geist. And the song goes
the fortress down. That we construct inside of our minds. It keeps us apart from each other. So, MD Geist,
or Most Divine Geist, is
Mike?
I'm finding that far too funny. So, what we're talking about, Brain Palace?
I think we're talking about Brain Palace.
Brain Palace?
Have you been, Aaron?
No. Oh, what?
It's an awful place.
Dave, I don't want to talk about Brain Palace.
Nor do I.
I want to talk about Vaya and how incredibly hot she is in her own weird 80s way in MD Geist.
Oh, that Vaya. Well, eventually
well,
she goes
Vaya
crazy,
is
right?
Like, she's like the anime girl in the MD Geist OVA, which is, you know, you can't really be a cute anime girl in MD Geist, but she kind of is. She's got this kind of exotic thing going. She wears lots of makeup. She has spiky hair. And at one point, she takes off her clothes to try to seduce Geist.
Doesn't work.
And it totally doesn't work.
Geist cares about her heart.
Yeah, that's right.
He's not gay or anything.
No, absolutely
no,
not.
No, he just has a killer mullet.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything.
Well, no, for Geist, it's not about gay or about straight. It's about the fighting. And there's no path to fighting in seducing Vaya. So he activates the Doomsday Machine and destroys the Earth.
And then she goes crazy.
That's right.
And she sleeps with another most dangerous guy, but he's not as dangerous as Geist is, so really she's not protected.
Well, thank you very much for coming to my party, first of all.
So we barely made it if we hadn't been in traffic for
Well, I mean, the party just kept going, and you got here, and the party wasn't over yet, so you kept it going.
I already told the viewers that you're an excellent host. And awesome
you can also you can kick us out at any time. I should go get my
I'd like to state that for the record, I have a column on Sunday that is going live. I have not written this column yet.
You didn't take this weekend off?
I should probably do it soon. I would like to apologize to my editor, Zach Birchie.
This show won't go up for months. Like,
people don't know this, but he doesn't work exactly necessarily, but he stays active. He checks his email. He keeps track of stuff during weekends when he shouldn't necessarily have to worry about work, just to make sure that the writings of slackers like me go live at the right time.
Oh, yeah. You should,
it's like my the publication time of my column is biweekly. It happens on Sundays. It's really actually due on Thursdays or Fridays, but that seldom happens.
My shelf life's due on, like, Saturday, but I usually make it. Like, I mean, I haven't been late, if you count East Coast, West Coast times.
Well, there have been times when, I was going to say, I've used that too. I've totally used that argument too. I was going to say, there have been times when shelf life doesn't go live until, like,
Oh, it's because I don't post it.
8 or 9 o'clock p.m. Monday.
Yeah, Bamboo post it, so I don't have anything to do with that part.
Oh, it's Bamboo's fault.
I don't wonder
okay.
if they, but I don't know if, I don't think that's late. I think they're just doing it to stagger it with other columns, but right. I don't actually know because we don't really talk about it.
I'm trying to remember. What did you review for Shelf Life this week? You reviewed Nyan Koi and what else?
Eric Howell Under the Bridge mm-hmm. and Galaxy Express Adieu Galaxy Express 999. Yeah.
Yeah, I was happy that you talked about that. I mean, there are a few people I know that like revere that film above the original. I think of it as a retread.
I think the plot doesn't really hold up, but the visuals are really
great. The visuals are stunning. They are yeah. better than the original. My problem is just like it invalidates the original. It's like, okay, Tetsuro takes this spiritual journey and becomes a man. And then the second movie, it's like, well, no, you're not a man yet. You have to... You did the mummy issues thing. Now you got to do the daddy issues thing.
Yeah, it doesn't really hold up. But I mean, I don't know. I appreciate all like that effort.
All I can say is tomorrow I'm going to find the discotheque booth in the dealer's room, and I'm going to see Selby Johnson, and I'm going to buy those DVDs from him for $15 each, so I can give him money for releasing those movies because those are awesome movies.
Yeah, it's really great they put them out, and some of the other releases that company's been doing. Like, I'm glad that they're bringing out older stuff, and there are definitely a lot of people who read the column who are like, wow, I didn't own this before, or I've heard of it, but now it's so great that it's on DVD. It hasn't been on DVD before, right? Like the Galaxy Express 999 movies?
What's that?
Have the Galaxy Express 999 movies been on DVD before? Or?
No, they haven't. They were released by Viz on VHS only in 1996 and 97. Actually, the first issue of On America magazine from Viz that I ever had my work published in was a Galaxy Express 39 cover story in May of 1996.
Nice.
I reviewed the Abashiri Family and Blue Seed Volume 1 from ADV Films.
I remember Blue Seed.
Yeah. Blue Seed was something they released over and over again. It wasn't a bad series, but if you watched it now, I don't think it would hold up. But the Galaxy Express 39 films, they're one of those things that I'm so happy they came out because they're bilingual, they have all the features, and I have these homebrew DVD-ROMs that I can finally just throw away.
Did you make your own, like...
No, someone else made them on the internet. There was a BitTorrent file. I downloaded that. I burned it. And I had that for about a year. And now it's just like, all right, I can throw these away. It's kind of like how VHS fan subs used to be.
I was thinking it's funny on like the ANN cast when I think Justin talks about like remastering his own DVDs when he's like upset with the quality. He'll do like crazy text.
I did that for the first time this week for a title that is going to be featured in Dubs That Time Forgot this weekend.
That's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, this was just for a 25-minute pilot from Harmony Gold, but it took me a long time to do because they cut out every stitch of Japanese text. And there was a lot of it.
Did you, like, so you put it back together? Or?
I put it all back together based on the Japanese DVD footage, which had been recently remastered. It required a lot of little bit of editing, but it looks really good, and I'm excited to be showing it to fans on Saturday night.
Sweet. Maybe I'll go to it. Oh, are you going to do, like, anime cult classics? Oh, what are your panels this weekend?
My panels, this Otakon, I'm doing a panel at the behest of my friend Doug Wilder. He had a panel idea for underrated mecha anime in Region 1. Basically, there have been some stuff that have been big hits, like Evangelion, Code Geass, Gundam. We're going to focus on the stuff that kind of fell by the wayside. Not even stuff like Nadesco level, but stuff like it never made an impression at all. We're going to spend an hour talking about that on Saturday at 7, and Saturday later that day at 10 p.m., I'm going to be doing another presentation of Dubs That Time Forgot, 100% all new material. We got a new black and white film that I didn't even know existed until 2 months ago, a pilot episode of a very popular Japanese anime from the 80s, and a whole bunch of other stuff that you've never heard of at 10 p.m. on Saturday.
Sweet. I really liked anime cult classics last year. That was amazing.
That's going to turn into a column for Anime News Network.
Oh, sweet.
It's one of those things that I'd love to talk about it further, but most of the bases have been covered.
So you wrote to a bunch of cults and got them to send you their creepy films. Are you still on their mailing list?
I am still in touch with not the Institute for Research into Human Happiness, the IRH. Those guys are creepy and kind of aggressive. The other cult that I talked to, the Soka Gakkai, they're basically Nichiren Buddhists who they chant sutras a few times a day. Their leader is a bit megalomaniacal, but they are harmless. And I've been in touch with them. They don't know about the panel I did, but they published manga by Mitsutari Yokoyama in English as part of their New York City newsletter in 1968.
Whoa.
I'm trying to find copies of this because I'm tracing the history of Japanese manga in English.
I read the part in like Frederick Schott's book where he like goes to buy manga that was put out by what Shinrikyo or whatever the
yeah
like,
Am Shinrikyo was part did outreach with manga in English, but the Nichiren Buddhists, the Soka Gakkai people, were doing English manga in 1968.
So like before the original, like before they published that, I thought Barefoot Gen was the first manga that was.
No, Barefoot Gen was in 1980. That was was published by a gentleman named Leonard Reifus, who I've been in touch with. He's a really cool dude. He still has copies of those original comics, and those were interesting because they weren't just translated to English. They were flipped and they were colored,
yeah.
So they resembled American comics.
Right.
And I mean, his sole goal in producing those manga adaptations was warning of the dangers of nuclear power. Like, to this day, Leonard Reifus is an activist against nuclear power.
Wow, it's a bit loud behind you. But, the reason I brought up the Frederick Schott thing was because he went to, like, an Shinrikyo, like, store in Japan and, like, bought the comic, and then as soon as he, like, left the store, turned the corner, Japanese police accosted him and were like, what were you doing in the store? But also, they were just, like, they were doing surveillance on the store all the time and, like, talking to people who came in and out. But it was, like, a really interesting story to read in his, like, book about it.
The Aum Shinrikyo cult were a danger to the Japanese government. Even after their leader, Shoko Asahara, was captured, for a couple of years, there were plots to basically bust him out of prison, including a Russian follower of his had a plan to get a Hind gunship, a helicopter gunship, from the Russian military, to steal it, to seize it, and fly it, and basically blow a wall into the prison Shoko Asahara was in to get him out of there.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Doesn't that happen in 20th Century Boys?
something like that. I mean, I'm sure that story was parts of that story were made as a result of the Aum Shinrikyo people.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, and also my other cult story is, like, I had some friends in college who, for a hobby, they decided they would join a different cult each week.
Wow.
To see what kind of, like, free food and stuff they could get.
Yeah.
They liked the Hare Krishnas a lot because the food was good and they didn't have much of a commitment.
The Hare Krishna are, they're not wonderful people. I have some problems with them, but they have vegetarian feasts every week in most cities that are very nice.
Right. Free. Take it off. Oh, good to see you again, if we don't see you again.
Yeah, definitely. So, thank you again, sir.
It's
wonderful.
My pleasure.
See you this weekend.
Absolutely.
Sure. Although the funniest story was from a UFO cult, where the UFO cult said, like, had everyone at one point lay down in one room on the floor and started playing soothing music, and then they were like, and now we're going to play music from our creator just to you. And it was just like, My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. It wasn't like by an alien or... I don't even know. Like,
I was going to guess that this was the Church of Scientology.
And no, this was a different one. I don't think they did Scientology, but they did go to like a Mason Hall. They tried to join the Masons, and the Masons were like, you should join up at your local college chapter. We're like, they don't think our college has a chapter, but...
Well, you have to remember that we dodged a bullet a few years ago. The Church of Scientology, I think in 2000 or 2001, were talking about financing an anime of Battlefield Earth.
Sweet. That would be awesome.
I would have liked to see that. I was going to say, is everyone pulling out now?
I am.
I don't want to wake up too many of my roommates. My 10 roommates. All right.